the validation realm has changed so much that anything before 2015, you have to literally reevaluate either through justification or mini validation tests or doing something to address that your current state of testing that you have in your design history files is still valid because of these reasons. And if not, then you have to do a revalidation.
The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. MentorMate empowers healthcare clients to deliver on their mission and transform the human experience through technology. For over 20 years, clients have trusted MentorMate to guide their vision, design innovative products, and build secure solutions while understanding the specific nuances of their industry. MentorMate's global team in the U.S., Eastern Europe, and Latin America helps clients in all sectors of healthcare transform their organizations. From Fortune 500 pharmaceutical companies and commercial payers to hospital systems, medical device manufacturers, and beyond. Learn more at MentorMate.com/healthcare.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone out there in Medical Alley. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Medical Alley podcast. This is your host, Frank Chastulky, and today we're going to be talking about a topic that I know is very important to many of you. I'm so glad to be joined today by Elpa Patel, who's the Director of Scientific Improvement at Nelson Labs. Elpa, thank you so much for joining us on the Medical Alley podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and support this discussion.
Wonderful. Well, maybe the first thing we could start with, just kind of table setting for the audience. Could you tell us a little bit about your work at Nelson Labs? What are you doing? What are you trying to do? And then tell us a little bit about Nelson Labs itself for those who maybe aren't as familiar.
Yeah, of course. So Nelson Labs is a global company that is a medical, we support medical device submissions to the FDA for market. We're a testing laboratory that does a lot of microbiology testing. In my current role at Nelson Labs, I overlook quality, regulatory, scientific test methods that we use to validate medical devices. And these are predominantly, my focus is reusable medical devices. I participate in various standard committees in the medical device industry that govern these validations. And as a director of scientific improvement at my company, I globally overlook the scientific operations of day-to-day lab activities and specifically reprocessing validations, as that's my expertise. I also ensure test method applications that we use to validate these devices follow regulatory and quality guidelines specified in standards. So that's the overall nutshell of my job.
Indeed. And you mentioned the reprocessing work. I know that's something that has evolved quite a bit over the last couple of decades. Maybe you could talk a bit more specifically about that. How has the reprocessing sector changed during your career?
It has evolved a lot. In the 20 years that I've been in the reprocessing world, I have seen so much changes. I started doing this work in 2003 in flexible endoscopes, believe it or not. And that was my first study that I started. And it has expanded the validation realm and the testing requirements and the standards that are governing these validations. Right. So we're seeing a huge push forward in this sector with tighter regulations and more user human factors and patient experience.
Oh, interesting. And what a place to start on that inflexible endoscope scenario where there is still extensive work being done on the processing and reprocessing of those devices.
Yes, there's a lot going on in that world right now.
Yeah. You're going to be speaking at an upcoming conference, the MD&M Minneapolis event that's going on in just a short time after this will be released, actually. So it'll be coming up in November. What are you going to talk about?
At the MDM, I'm talking about, I'm doing two talks. I'm doing one for Tech Theater that's going to be cleaning validations and how your IFUs, the instructions for use that manufacturers use, how are they impacted with the new standards that have come out regarding validation requirements. And at the stage, I'm talking about design history files. What do manufacturers need to understand about design history files for devices that were performed or are still being used currently as their worst case devices? And do they have validations for devices that were in 1999? You know, the validation realm has changed so much that anything before 2015, you have to literally reevaluate either through justification or mini validation tests or doing something to address that your current state of testing that you have in your design history files is still valid because of these reasons. And if not, then you have to do a revalidation.
Oh, yeah. That's a not miss topic and discussion. I hear from our member companies all the time the challenges around design history files in particular, including from our corporate development team members who are out there acquiring companies. And you know, good quality management, good history files are things they're increasingly looking at in their diligence processes, and they're finding a lot of companies are coming up short. That will be a great talk to hear. And we know regulatory compliance, right, is fundamental for the industry in general, but as you said earlier, it is ever evolving. What do you do? How do you stay up to date on what's going on, how the requirements are changing, and making sure then that Nelson Labs is remaining current and using the best practices?
So that's a very good question. We're fortunate that Nelson Labs is an active, plays a very active role in standard committees. I personally participate in various standard committees such as AMI, ISO, ASTM, AATB, and many various organizations whose focus is enhancing testing methods for the future, right? So we are in the front steps. We are trying to help with the evolution. We're trying to see the future and how can we help with these. And we have a huge presence in these standard committees where we participate in writing, revisions, voting, and we're active voters. We're not the backseaters, right? We're sitting in the front of the table and ensuring that we are participating and understanding what's actually required. And there's a balance.
Well, I have to say, I really appreciate that work. And I would say to everyone out there listening, if you are not involved in the relevant, you know, associations and standards bodies for your organization, you're potentially doing yourself and your company a disservice, right? There are people and organizations who are very active in advancing the state of the art, the state of the science, and you know, making sure your voice is a part of it is really important. And for the work you've done in that, maybe you could give the listeners a little bit more depth, continuing what you just described, of the kind of work that gets done within like AMI or ASTM. What's like a day in the life or sort of the process that might happen for these organizations to develop and promulgate new standards or guidance?
With these standards, as you can tell, that it's not a quick and easy, right? No. It takes about 4 to 5 years to actually come up with a nice plan that you're going to write these standards, and then you're going to bring it to the committee and see if they agree with the changes you've made, with the additions you've made. Obviously, there's a small committee that puts it together. Then they take it to the larger committee to ask for any comments to what we put together. And let me give an example. I am a co-chair of AMI Working Group 61, which looks at liquid chemical sterilants and high-level disinfection in healthcare environment. And this document that I've been working on, I think it's been 7 years now.
Oh, wow.
And we are no way close to completing it. So it does take about, I'm thinking, another 2 years of rotation of comments before we can finalize the document. And the last time it was revised was in 2013. Oh, wow. So there's a need of these documents to evolve and move forward and be quick and fast, but they don't take as fast as they can, which is a difference to ASTM. ASTM is quick, fast, and they talk about test methods. AMI gives guidances and recommendations. ASTM actually writes exactly how to do those tests. So there is a good balance between them. To be honest, we put a lot of time. I probably in the fall and spring are our standard committee time. Mm-hmm. We probably put 6 to 7 hours a week.
Wow.
Just on these standards. I mean, I personally participate in over 15 AMI standards and over 7 ASTM standards. And that doesn't include ISO and other standards that I'm involved in.
Right. I mean, it speaks to the complexity of what's going on, but also to the importance of it, because these are the standards, these are the guidances that are going to shape the future direction of the industry. I'd be curious, thinking about the future a little bit, what do you see on the horizon? What are you watching as far as opportunities for testing improvement, whether it's on the standards and guidance side or new technologies? What are you looking out on the horizon for?
So right now we're looking in the horizon for laboratory testing. If you talk about laboratory testing, yeah. What are they moving towards? They're moving towards robotic applications, right? How do we bring robotic applications to minimize human factors and human errors that happen every day for testing?
Oh, interesting. Tell us, what do you mean by robotic applications? Is that like automating the testing itself?
That's right. Oh. Automating certain portions of the testing that could be automated. The only problem with these things are, how do you validate those, right? Yeah. How do you make them think, what if something happens wrong? With our eyes, say if we're doing dilution series, we can see that, oh, we messed something up. Mm-hmm. Will the robot be able to pick those things up? So we're still far from it, but we're starting to see robotic moving into the laboratory space right now. And that is where a lot of expenditures are being put towards.
Well, and then what about on the standards and the guidance side? What are you looking on the horizon for?
For standard and guidance side, we are looking for reusable, at least, because I sit on most of these committees on that,
yep.
Is that we're starting to bring in patient and human factors into validation testing. Oh. That before was never considered. It was manufactured designs is designed for this application, and that's it. And then they use it, then it goes to the reprocessing departments, right? Mm-hmm. So this third leg of the chair, or as I would say, a stool, sorry, is not there, right? The healthcare facility is not there. Testing lab and manufacturers are there. And they're there, but not really there. So we're seeing a strong push from the healthcare industry to participate in the standards and bring their perspective to the platform and educate us. And advise us that what you guys are writing and validating is not what's happening in the real world. Oh, what are you guys doing about that?
Right. There's the standard as written, and then there's the world we live in, and those things don't always sync up. And you mentioned the patient side as well. How is that starting to come into it?
Patient side, so for our validations, we just saw a cleaning validation publish last year for the first time. First cleaning validation document in the world got published by AMI in August of 2022. And in that, it specifies how you're going to soil the medical devices and what type of soils you have to use. Test soils that are blood test soils, mucus test soils, depending on the application of how the device is being used. Now we have to consider, how are we going to soil these devices? And say if you're doing a cauterizing devices, we need the cauterizing equipment at the lab to actually simulate that action. That was never heard of before.
Wow.
And we're starting to see that come down the pipelines.
So a lot of new things for developers and for the testers to consider. I'm really glad that there are people like you working on these issues and that there are companies like Nelson Labs helping to bring the new capabilities out to the industry. I want to say thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And having me come out and speak about the next phase of the world and what's happening. So I'm really excited about that.
Indeed. And folks, if you haven't registered yet, MD&M, it starts on October 11th at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Medical Alley will be down there in force, as we are every year, looking to shake hands. Make sure you check out Dr. Patel's talks. We'll have information about the event on our website and in the show notes. Until next time, thank you for joining us on the Medical Alley Podcast. If you're not already a subscriber, you can check out medicalalleypodcast.org, or you can find us on Apple, Spotify, and now on our YouTube channel. And hey, would you do me one little favor? Would you share this episode with just one other person? If everyone listening did that, we'd help to spread this information and the great stories of so many other things happening in Medical Alley further. I'd really appreciate it. Until next time, have a great day.